Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this April the 3rd on the West Coast, or if you are in the Eastern or Central time zones, then you know it's the morning of April the 4th. Welcome. So nice to have you with us. We are going to continue along a similar path that we've been on for most of this week, actually. I'm, again, humbled and grateful for all the support and prayer that I've been getting from my many friends around the world in the listening audience, and we appreciate your prayers at this sorrowful time in my family's life right now with the passing of my father, although we're keeping our heads and chins up and rejoicing and in our father's transcendence to a higher state of consciousness and a much better place than we are living in currently. Now, that sounds like that might not leave much hope for mankind here on the planet, and yet many times through tragedy, we begin to see things a bit clearer than we did moments before the tragedy struck. In fact, weathering the storm of unexpected circumstances, especially when it's of a spiritual nature, often tempers us in a way to deal with problems and to grow ourselves. And so my guest tonight and I have decided that we're going to continue this because actually such a discussion and the hopeful and anticipated revealing of deeper and higher truths will enable you and empower you to face certain consequences of the actions that those that rule this planet are taking and are about to take, and quite likely give us the outcome that we would choose for ourselves as opposed to the ones that they would choose for us. And rather than go on and on and on about that, I think it's time to bring tonight's guest. He is our regular Friday night guest, my co-host on Friday nights now. And he is our resident science advisor here on Evident Footprints. He is a very accomplished scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And got many other skills that we talk about from time to time. I value his spiritual insights as much as I do his scientific acumen. And so he's well qualified to talk about some of the things that we will cover tonight. And hopefully we are going to shine some light on the darkness and reveal some truths that are really staring us in the face. And we're going to talk about why we don't see them and how we can begin to see them, understand them, accept them, and adapt them in our everyday lives. Welcome back to Evident Footprints, my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm very encouraged by all the support and prayer that I'm getting from friends and family alike, and I'm grateful for that. So I'm doing well. Thank you. And yourself. with all the work you're doing and that, and you're able to find time at this late hour on the weekend every week faithfully for all the time that I've been on the air, and I'm grateful for your being here.
Well, actually, it's not the chore you make it out to be, because I do enjoy your company and I enjoy participating in the show, so that takes the edge off it enormously.
Okay. Jim, we decided that we were going to talk. We had been, for the past few weeks, talking about power. We've been talking about the transmission of power, the different types of power that exist. And we sort of adopted an analogous aspect of power and how it's exerted over us. And of course, this is not necessarily power that's traveling through wires, although that's being contemplated as we speak. But through the use of mind control technology and modification of foods and other substances that we consume for a variety of purposes, there is a dark cloud hanging over humanity, which has caused people to sort of be ignorant or numb or apathetic and a variety of other adjectives that basically make us non-responsive to whatever goes on. And there's an aspect of who we are that's constantly trying to make itself known to us. And that's really our true essence, our higher essence, if you will, which really has no significant importance long-term in this reality. It's the eternal aspect of who we are. And you know what I'm talking about, of course, spirit. And there are so many different interpretations of what true spirit is that people are basically confused. If you begin talking about things that are spiritual, then people think you're getting religious on them, and then they contemplate organized religion and the experiences they've had, whether good or bad, in that respect. And then people start making comparisons to what they believe or what they've been taught, and much of which they accept without question. So we have a dilemma. We have people that are behind the scenes controlling things very secretly, or very much out in front of us in sort of an arrogant fashion. And then we have this aspect that's presented to us to cause us to hope that someone will come in and rescue us from this nightmare. And that really doesn't have to happen. That's become, especially in the last few days, that's become so overwhelmingly evident to me that it warrants a serious discussion. And not necessarily analysis, but I think just bringing out some higher truths about man's true nature. And when I say man, of course, I mean man and woman, but we're saying mankind or humanity, our true nature, and how we can tap into that, how we can begin looking at it so that we remove the things that are stopping us from achieving that plateau of consciousness. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I'm trying to basically set up this discussion that we're basically ignorant or unconscious about who we are. And yet there's some aspect of that true nature always trying to get out. And occasionally it can come out I've described it on a past show sort of like throwing a switch or a circuit breaker. We've had the breaker thrown and the current is now open, and so the flow is stopped. And what we're trying to do is close that circuit so the energy can flow through it, and the power that comes with it. Would you like to comment a little bit about that?
Well, actually, the imagery that comes to mind when you're speaking is pretty universally understood and quite descriptive. I think that the real power behind everything in this realm is actually spiritual. And that might be the first thing that people have to actually grasp and then realize that they're actually animated in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The first thought that comes to mind is like watching a plant grow with time-lapse photography, for instance. There's an actual force. There's an actual unseen entity which is directing the growth and the pattern of that plant. And all living things, and possibly even non-living things, have a spiritual component to it. And we are not excluded from that. We are, the mere fact that we are alive should tell you intuitively that we are essentially a hybrid between the material world and the spiritual world. Because living flesh is, in fact, a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And this becomes most evident at death, of course, not only to the person who dies, but to the ones that are left behind with the corpse.
Yes.
So the higher realm is really our true nature. And people are willing to believe that, then I guess the next most intelligent question to ask is, well, if we're truly spiritual beings by nature, then why are we here? You know, what are we doing in this place? Well, the interesting thing is that apparently the three-dimensional world is the best place for spirit to manifest in order to have learning experience. And if you can grasp that concept, then it becomes overwhelmingly important to realize that each of us has a goal or a life's learning that should be accomplished on this world in order for those experiences to be incorporated into the fabric of our higher self, our spiritual self.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, once you realize that this is the way things were set up, then to have to succumb to an agenda that's imposed by outside forces that more or less guide, restrict, and otherwise organize our lives for us, truly shows the evil of the system. Because,
yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to comment. I want to let you finish your statement, though. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it truly demonstrates the evil of the system, because here you have a natural plan of spiritual evolution engineered by the deity himself, but you've got these people with enormous egos who feel that they can short-circuit that whole thing and direct the lives of people for their own personal earthly gains.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine anything that's more evil than that.
Yeah. Well, if I go to your explanation or your description of, let's say, a plant found in nature, the universe is set up and the properties and the qualities that are necessary for the growth and survival of that plant and its accompanying experience are perfect. And it's only when man or some outside force interferes with that and that it becomes corrupted and incapable of doing what is natural. I would submit that mankind itself was created to be perfect, at least given the opportunity to make choices which would hopefully be choices that would continue that stream along the lines of perfection, constantly raising its vibration until and through the process of self-creation and co-creation. When I say self-creation, I don't mean creating of itself, but creating by itself. In other words, if you're an artist, you create art. If you're a musician, you create music. If you're a farmer, you create edible food, just as an example. Or you may be raising animals for a variety of purposes. We could go on and on and on with all the different trades, but basically, the goal would be, as you said, to learn as and to experience in a manner where there's a progression to a higher state, to a higher state of consciousness, to a higher state of purpose, to a higher state of not only self-realization, but constantly moving higher toward the ultimate all of creation. Because it is, even though it's individualized, it's part of the whole. It's part of the original seed of the creation. And both in its inception and in its expanded nature. Now, when we interfere with that process, whether we do that with nature itself, or we do that within ourselves, or we allow others to do that to us, when it's done to us, it's like us interfering with the nature, the natural order of things, plants and animals. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but basically I see a parallel in that statement that you made, that it's an interference. And there doesn't have to be any reason other than a mindless desire to control it, whether it means killing it or causing illness, just to experience what it feels like to hold a power over it. And it seems rather insane for someone to begin attacking a plant with the purpose of destroying it. Yet we do that billions of times a day all over this planet and other aspects of nature. So that was the point I wanted to make there.
Well, and it's a good point, too, because once you interfere with something that's being guided by a natural course, that's when all of these secondary forces appear, which in the realm of psychology, we talked about last week, you can refer to them as neuroses or psychoses. They have their own manifestations, simply because of the fact that the natural scheme of things was interfered with. I think it's important to establish, too, that there are really two states of being. We as living entities in the flesh are quite familiar at this point in our existence with the state of being called living or life. But actually, death is a state of being. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is, if you start to think about what it really means, as long as you grasp the concept, or I should say embrace the concept, of some form of survival after death, then you start to ask some very rudimentary questions, like, for instance, well, okay, if part of me survives, it's obviously not physical. And if it does survive as a spirit, in a spiritual form, then where am I and what am I perceiving? Well, the interesting thing is that when you're alive, your consciousness is bound by the focus of the senses. And out of all the senses that we have, it's interesting to note that they're all located in the head. So there's a natural tendency for you to assume that your consciousness is restricted to the head and therefore to the brain. But people that are yogis or other disciplines where they study these things realize that consciousness can be moved around even in your own body. And so it stands to reason then that if the body fails, that there might be other mechanisms that allow that consciousness not only to survive, but to continue to be cognizant. Because we're no longer bound by the senses, the five senses rather, that we're familiar with, but rather functioning on the level of the sixth and possibly higher water senses. And as my friend Randy often says, the difference between the two situations is simply what you perceive as your baseline. You know, when we're living, we judge everything by ourselves, which is a natural thing to do, and we look out upon the world. But as a disembodied entity, our perspective is going to be entirely different. And we're almost going to be looking in the opposite direction, which means that our vantage point and our perception of reality is going to be entirely different, and we're going to be coming at that from a different direction. Mm-hmm. The ancients used to say that every time there is a death in the physical world, there's a birth in the spiritual world. And the opposite is also true. When somebody decides to reincarnate and they leave the spiritual realm, in a sense, that's a death in that domain, even though it's temporary, to allow us to manifest here. So I think if you start to contemplate these things and relate them to yourself, it's a very necessary first step in coming to the conclusion that you are more than a meat machine.
Yeah.
And once you start to establish that reality within yourself, it actually puts you in the proper position to contemplate what aspect of you is spiritual.
Mm-hmm. If we were to imagine what it would be like to be a plant, and I'm just saying imagine with the limited amount of thought that one could identify with a plant, but imagine what a plant does to survive. It takes both water and nutrients from the soil and sort of blends them together and produces chlorophyll and some other substances, breathes, probably emits some carbon dioxide, or in the case of some plants, filters carbon dioxide from the air and maybe makes some use of it in the process, breaking it down into useful substances. And imagine that the plant now all of a sudden had a consciousness that was imposed upon it by some force alien to its true nature. For instance, we know plants respond to music. They respond to thought, especially human thought. I would tend to think that most animals, if they're not living in a state of paranoia or fear brought about by violence and mistreatment by the owner or by someone interfering in their environment, an animal would be just as naturally happy as a plant would be. But enter man and man's devices, and that plant can become disturbed and probably exhibit signs of some sort of imbalance in its perception, its ability to perceive its environment and dangers and interferences in its normal energy patterns and its normal way of existence. Imagine that you could create a plant that would become fearful. It would lack many of the qualities, if not all of the qualities, of a normal, healthy plant, and it would be manifesting signs of its disrupted nature. Now, if the plant were to imagine what was happening to the human, or if it could sense, and we know they do sense what's how humans can be, they also manifest that within themselves, even with the person leaving the plant alone, just having the plant being in proximity to the human that's exhibiting, let's say, paranoia or fear or denial or a lack of awareness and insight as to its own true nature, that plant will probably die. And you know, and I know, many people who have a great amount of difficulty growing plants in their home, even if they treat them fairly well, feeding them and giving them water, making sure they get some sunlight. And so if that's the case, then the things that are being done to mankind are what are interfering with man's true nature, creating the sphere. And so we've got to acknowledge that the sphere exists. And since fear itself is not a real substance, it's really an illusory state brought about by a whole sequence of illusory events and illusory images and illusory sounds or illusory experiences, temporal experiences, those things which are created for the moment, but they don't exist in eternity. Then we see in that a solution, do we not, as to how to overcome fear and how to overcome our problems?
Well, that's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, your entire delivery on the reaction of plants is very interesting because it brings me back to the early days when I was working with Ivan Sanderson. And we had the occasion to investigate the researches of a guy by the name of Clave Baxter. And he had been a fellow who was operating polygraphs.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, he was doing the normal thing that people do with polygraphs, just determining if someone was lying or not. But he had the inspiration to see if plants would respond in a similar way to people. And so he put the electrodes on the plant or in the soil. I forget how he did it. But the point is that he noticed the plants absolutely demonstrate reactions to emotions of different types. And then they did a whole series of experiments which were very, very interesting. Like, for instance, pouring brine shrimp into boiling water, which of course killed the shrimp. The minute that this was done, the plant went berserk. But the most amazing of all of the experiments that were written up, in my opinion, was the one where they took two plants, put them side by side. One of them was wired to the polygraph, and the other was just sitting there. And they filed a bunch of people past these plants. And, of course, they had minor reactions, but nothing extraordinary. And then one guy, when he reached the control plant, simply took out a pair of hedge cutters and chopped the plant all to pieces. And the plant sitting next to it went totally berserk, which was clearly demonstrated by the change in the patterns on the polygraph. And that's extraordinary enough, but the finale is even more incredible. Several months later, they had that same plant set up, and they filed a whole bunch of people past the plant, and in the crowd was the guy who had slaughtered the control plant. And the minute that he got in close proximity to this plant, the plant demonstrated fear, anxiety, or whatever the emotions were, because he recognized the guy, and he thought that the person was going to do the same thing to him. Now, that's a pretty incredible thing when you stop and consider the fact that we don't attribute any higher form of consciousness to a plant. I mean, if we did, we'd probably hesitate to mow the lawn. But the fact of the matter is that everything is conscious. Now, your second statement, which is interesting also, when you draw the same parallel in the human realm, and you say that, you know, we would probably be manifesting totally differently if it wasn't for things that are impeding our normal flow of energy, our normal progression through life. And so the question is, I guess, well, what manifests in our lives when these forces are interfered with? Well, the interesting thing is, if you go back and you look for a correlation on this, you'll find out that the further back you go in history, the less heart disease there is, the less cancer there is, the less of all these different diseases there are. Look at autism alone. I just watched a thing on that today. It's almost an epidemic. When I was a kid, you never even heard of autism.
Yeah.
So the answer is that these energies, when they're not permitted to take their normal courses, they have secondary effects, which manifest as disease, and it can be starting off as a mental disorder, winding up being a very real physiological disorder. So all of this stuff is part and parcel of the result of these external forces attempting to force us to live in an unnatural way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what comes to mind in your statement, and I agree with everything you're saying, not because you may have agreed with some of my statements, but I'm listening to you, your sort of analysis of what I said, but you're expanding upon that in a way that it's resonating as truth to me. And you mentioned Randy's comment or comments. And what comes to mind is Dr. Richard Norton, who has been on the show a few times, and I hope to have him again. In fact, he wrote the model on addiction. This had never been done. And he was actually imprisoned for speaking out about corruption in the bringing to the street market the drug OxyContin. And he was set up by the government so that they could silence him, and they did this by creating a false account of how he was running a particular hospital in Virginia. The hospital was doing well, and he was not playing ball like they wanted to, and they went after the assets of the hospital and put him in prison. And while he was in prison, he realized that there was not really an addiction model that anyone had created. And he came to the conclusion that all addictions are created by, and you used one of these words, obsessive compulsive disorders. That you have to create the circumstances that will support an obsessive compulsive disorder, which then leads one to the particular addiction. And with one individual, it might be a drug. Another might be alcohol, which is a drug, or some other substance or some other behavior that's determined to be or frowned upon to be one that interferes with the natural order of things. And yet this is done by the very people that make the laws, and it's done to us. So the repetition of a message, for instance, is one way you can create an obsessive compulsive disorder and then have people be addicted to gambling or have them be addicted to entertainment, which is basically just something that controls their thought patterns, keeping them from being in touch with who they really are. So that model has been created, the definition of that, and it gives us a basis on which to study addictions. In reference to your comment about autism, that's been shown and demonstrated to be directly related to the very vaccines that are given to infants. Massive amounts of vaccines that are going to create all kinds of health problems. There's no doubt about it. And so you have a dysfunctional development of the brain and the nervous system, and the general flow of information that actually creates life or sustains the body, interferes with every natural aspect. Yet this is a form of insanity that is permitted because pharmaceutical companies make billions and billions of dollars from this, and will make more with the Trojan diseases that they set up in the particular individual that received the vaccines. So what I'm getting at is this is planned on every stage that we're being attacked under the guise of what they say it is. People don't even take the time to use their own discernment to determine if those things are actually true. We do know the answers inside, is what I'm saying. We do have the answers that we're seeking within us. So the key is to make people aware of that, and it comes back to that word responsibility that we so often use, that I'm going to take care of my business, and I'm sure you're going to take care of your business, but our business isn't taking care of everyone else's business. But we're offering them an opportunity to do some research, at least inspect their own circumstances and determine if there's something lacking or if there's something, an overabundance of something else. It's always the imbalance that creates the problem, too. Wherever there's a problem, there's an imbalance.
Well, that's certainly true enough. And Lord knows that almost every aspect of modern life is imbalanced. There isn't, I mean, I can't find it anyway, any kind of a total sense of balance in anything. I know in my own life I've been seeking for many years circumstances that would allow me to balance, you know, my natural aspects with the things that I feel I'm here to do, and it's almost impossible, and that's done deliberately.
Mm-hmm. There has to be a starting point in this, and I think we can discuss potential solutions or a methodology, maybe create a roadmap through this discussion as to how one might go about discovering within themselves, who they are and what they're here to do. And I think we could use combinations of those questions to make those determinations. I can look at the life of someone I know, someone who's passed on. I can study, not in any great depth, but just look at the qualities that person had and what made them successful, what made them happy, what made them sad, what they accomplished, how it affected other people. And we can begin to see there's a certain pattern of behavior and certain activities that we relate to experience that we'll see are common in those that we presume are successful, or those we conclude are have lived successful lives. And yet they went through the same things that we're going through. Where do you think the differences are between those people and those that don't pay any attention at all? Do you think it's a matter of consciousness, or is it a matter of apathy, or is it just a matter of having that switch thrown, you know, that circuit breaker?
Well, my take on that is that I really and truly don't believe that most people in our society, at least, really know why they're here. Or at least if they know, they don't connect that with what they do during the course of their lives. And what I mean by that is, I've had this discussion so many times now with people that I almost feel confident in stating it almost as a fact that most people select their careers in terms of how they feel that selection will affect their earning capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the word success has been equated deliberately to the amount of money that you make.
Yes.
And this is part of the problem, because it hasn't really got anything to do with that. I mean, the people who sidestep that trap are the ones that society look upon as being the oddballs, because you might find a person who is just so passionate about carving stone, for instance, or painting, or, I don't know, woodworking, you know, whatever it happens to be. And they don't make a lot of money. They actually suffer sometimes in the pursuit of what they love. But they're a lot happier than the people that are simply pursuing the almighty dollar. They have a whole different take on the meaning of life, and they have a feeling of satisfaction knowing internally that they are externalizing and developing along the lines that they are supposed to be pursuing. The difference is like night and day. Now, interestingly enough, I've lived both ways in different eras of my life. So I have a pretty good yardstick to make this judgment by. You know, when I was a lot younger, I was caught up with that whole thing about, you know, making as much money as possible. And I used to have visions about living in a certain type of home and driving a certain type of car and all those things that affect most of us. But the endless pursuit of that goal is in itself an imbalance, because you're going after something which is essentially like a carrot dangling out there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other way, when you're impassioned to do something, the energy comes from within, and it's a force that's attempting to erupt out of you. It propels you. And the difference is like night and day. Some people spend 8 hours, let's say, at a computer terminal writing up documents, and they come home and they're exhausted. They complain about the emptiness and stupidity of their job and how little money they're making and all this kind of stuff. And to contrast that, you might find a guy who is a car mechanic. He's loved that since he was a tiny kid. He's been at it all along. He may not make, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year, but whatever he does make, he feels great about it. And the most amazing thing is, he'll work 10, 12, 14 hours a day, and he's not tired. He's happy. He's got more energy. He's got a feeling of fulfillment. Those are the things which give you the clue as to which group you're in. Now, the other thing that's really important is, well, if you don't have any clue about what you're here for, I remember when I was a young guy, there was an older fellow who told me this story. And it was very helpful to me. It's kind of a simple mental, I don't know what you want to call it, pantomime that you do in your head. But basically, all you do is visualize yourself on a podium in front of thousands of people, and you're being introduced. And the object of the mental exercise is to say, you know, here is Don Nikoloff. I'm presenting him to you for the first time because of his achievements in, and then you fill in the blank. Well, in your case, Don, you might quite naturally say, you know, musical composition, something to do with sound therapy, you know, whatever it is. And most of us, when you're put in that position, will say something that's really profound if you give yourself the chance. And I'll bet you that most people who make that little test on themselves will be surprised to find that the voice inside them is saying something very different from what they're doing for a living.
Yes, yes, I agree with you. You know, it's funny. Well, it's not funny. I guess it's ironic that you mention the love of doing something, because I, number one, I agree with that. And I had this discussion with a lady who actually works with her daughter in a flower shop. And I was purchasing some flowers for my mother, and we got to talking about how the business was, and she mentioned that there were some things she wasn't sure. There were some things that she would like to do, and I asked her what those things were, and she said, "Well, I'm a person that likes to make people happy. I like bringing people joy, and I like giving love to people." And I said, "How different is that? Would that job be from what you're doing now?" And she said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you're exactly doing that. When a customer comes in here, they're purchasing one of your creations, and these are fine art. These are artisans I'm talking about. You know, they don't just sell flowers. They create beautiful arrangements, and there's a lot of themselves in this, their imagination, and there's creativity involved in this." But it boiled down to what I'm saying is, after I pointed this out, that someone comes in and they give a gift of flowers, one of these creations, and they all look different, and yet they're all beautiful and very much appreciated by the recipients. And when I clarified that what she's doing now is exactly what she described, she began to look at it differently. And I think it was that she was compelled to help her daughter. She sort of felt like she didn't make the choice. But also, she's into being a mom, you see, into nurturing her children at the same time, who were of adult age. And as we spoke more about it, she realized she's exactly where she would be. She had just never considered that as a possibility, if that makes any sense. So often we find ourselves doing what we love, but it's our outlook or the fact that we didn't really pay attention to how we got there and how much in line it is with what we're feeling inside in our heart about what we would do. She's doing all those things. She had just never looked at it that way. And I said, how would you feel, or how do you think your daughter would feel if you were to leave? Well, she would be lost without me because I do so much here. So you're important to what you're doing. I mean, you're hearing that from your coworkers as well. You're hearing that from me. I'm recognizing your gifts. And if I said, if you were not producing the quality of a product and a service that you do produce, I wouldn't even be here doing business with you in the first place. So she said, "I'm going to have to think about this. I'm going to have to spend some time contemplating what you said." And I think that's a very abnormal conversation to get into with somebody working in a flower shop, if you understand my meaning. There's a person doing what they would do, fulfilling all their goals and their desires, but feeling as though they were somehow put in that position out of necessity, as opposed to making a choice. I said, "Well, if you can come up with some other way to do that outside of this, then you know what you're supposed to be doing." And I think so many people in society feel that way about what they're doing. Earning a living, as you put it. They're just trying to make ends meet, and they see this as the opportunity that it presented itself, so they're going to stick it out as long as they can, no matter how miserable they may be. They're going to stick it out, and they're going to put up with misery in every other aspect of their life. Because if they're doing that about their calling in life, then you can't expect anything higher to come out of any other aspect of their life. Do you agree with that, or?
Oh, yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, while you were telling me that story, a friend of my son's came to mind. This is kind of an interesting thing because he told me this story not that long ago, and this chap is working as a toll collector on the Jersey Turnpike, of all places. And he hates it. I mean, he hates, you know, the whole business, sitting in the little box, you know, being in there under all kinds of conditions, dealing with grumpy people, not doing anything in particular with his talents. But, you know, he feels that he's locked into it. And so I said to my son, well, why doesn't this guy just do something different? He hates it that much, you know. And, of course, you know, the whole litany of normal excuses, like, oh, well, you know, he's there from 7 in the morning until 5 at night or whatever it is, and by the time he gets home, he doesn't want to be bothered, and he'll kick off his shoes, turn on the TV, and settle in with a beer. And so there's no time to do anything different. So you actually spend your whole life doing something you hate and just accepting it because you don't have the gumption to make a change. Well, I have news for you. There isn't any way that anybody is going to traverse from one level of consciousness to another without doing something. It just doesn't happen by itself. You either have to meditate, you have to be instructed, you have to do something, you have to put in an effort. I mean, even people who are addicted to various drugs still have to go out and buy the pill and pop it. So, I mean, you have to do something. Nothing is going to just be handed to you on a plate. And I think part of the problem with this whole concept of pursuing higher levels of consciousness and spirituality is bogged down in the way we are taught that you will, you know, something will be given to you. As a matter of fact, we're becoming such a socialistic society now that it's really ridiculous. The belief that the government is going to take care of you from cradle to grave. That whole philosophy really affects, whether you know it or not, your individual ability to pursue higher aspects of your own existence. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to take the initiative. You're going to be waiting for some kind of a lightning bolt to come down and initiate you into a higher realm. And the only time that's going to happen is when you run out of steam, and by that time it's too late to do anything.
Mm-hmm. You notice amongst people that are unhappy with what they do for a living, say, well, that's all I could find. That's all that was available. In other words, they're offered something, and they have one of two choices. They either take it or they leave it. And they do not account for the fact that we are creative beings and we really have the talents and the abilities and the means through which to manifest these things right inside ourselves. And somehow I guess it's an apathy and a laziness, and you got to throw fear in there too. I suppose, you know, you described the plant that reacted to this one guy. I would suggest that that might have been a politician, too. But it could be any person just carrying a dark kind of energy, or just something that was really interfering with the state of that plant, that plant reacted that way. Imagine if you brought a stream of people through that were loving, the plant would exhibit maybe even some abnormal growth. And I don't mean necessarily of a negative kind, but it could grow larger, or it could become more colorful, or it could resonate with that positive energy and become more beautiful, more productive, depending on what kind of plant it was. If it's a fruit-bearing plant, it might produce more fruit. And people are the same way. If they take the time to discover who they are, and you were just talking about meditation, for example, a way of observing oneself, not judging oneself, but observing oneself, and taking the time to ask that simple question that you posed, we would move ourselves from where we are to another place, and it would result immediately in some consciousness if one pays attention to the answer that they get. And that answer could come in a variety of ways. It could be an image. Maybe they attribute it to their imagination. You know, so often I encounter people that talk to me about music, that at some point in their life they took piano lessons or flute lessons or violin or guitar or some instrument, and a parent stopped them for one reason or another. They decided they didn't want to hear the instrument in the house. And that person was forbidden from playing the instrument, from taking lessons, from learning it. They were discouraged. And even into their adulthood, they exhibited some paranoia, some latent control, even though that parent may have passed on. And yet, when I pose the question, well, if you can afford lessons and you can afford an instrument to practice, why don't you take lessons now? Oh, I couldn't. Or my mother or my father or my parents wouldn't allow me to do that then, and I just it's too late. They'll give me all kinds of reasons that really have no substance in reality, because I could ask the simple question, at what point does a person stop learning in life? And usually the answer is when you die. Well, then I'm either talking to someone that learned an instrument, or I'm talking to a dead man. I can only draw two conclusions from that. So the fear that we experience manifests itself in a lot of different ways, and I think the excuses that we get are representative of the denial, the refusal to even face one's lot in life, or the refusal to acknowledge that something is a certain way. We have become so disembodied, you know, our power has been totally stolen from us. Go ahead, Jim.
No, that's absolutely true. And, you know, one of the most resounding excuses that you get all the time is, well, you know, what you're talking about is something totally spiritual, therefore it can't be measured, it can't be seen. You know, some people have special abilities and this and that. And it's a form of denial, for sure, or it's an excuse not to try. But the interesting thing is, if people would take the time to look around in the world and see what's going on, you'd find out that there's plenty of situations where results of a spiritual nature have effects on the physical world. Now, you were talking before about plants properly treated might exhibit unusual properties, either in color or in beauty or in growth, especially if they were fruit-bearing plants. Well, this is not necessarily known to everybody, but There was a movement, I believe it was back in the 70s, in Scotland, that went on in a group over there called Finhorn. And, these people were doing everything, by interacting with their environment, making use of, they were communing with nature, in other words. They were doing everything normally and naturally possible. And they were raising their own, fruits and vegetables. And, the results were astronomical. I mean, they had pictures of tomatoes, that were, larger than grapefruits. And, all sorts of things that happened there, including the states of health of the people was incredible. They were living in a very primitive environment, but yet they were extremely happy, and they had no health problems. Scotland is not exactly Florida. They were in the wintertime, it gets pretty cold, and yet they were running around clad very similarly to the way they used to be back in the old days when the Scots were, living in their original fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were making use of natural magic or whatever you want to call it. And it had very real effects, not only on them, but on their immediate environment. So all of these things, it's important to understand. These forces always start off in the spiritual realm, and they exist there as a reality before they precipitate their results to the earth plane or to the material plane. And we can allow those things to go unchecked and happen, the way that they may if left to their own devices, or you can actually get in there and make a positive contribution to the outcome of your own destiny. And that's what spiritual engineering is all about. That's what these few people do who appear to live outside the norm of the rest of us. But the most shocking thing is that's what the people who control you are doing. They are literally making use of these laws and this higher knowledge of spirituality in a negative way. So anybody that wants to see if it really works, all you have to do is dig into the arrangement that's all around us. And you'll find that these people are making use of those laws of nature for their own purposes, and that in itself should be proof enough that it exists and can be worked with, and if it can be worked with in a negative way, it can be worked with in a positive way.
Yes, well said. Now, while listening to you, my thoughts were leading to that conclusion that you just made. So if we look at some of the problems that the world has, then we could easily compare what we do in its relationship to nature in a variety of ways, not just with plants or not just with the animal kingdom, but the whole planet. I think our thinking patterns definitely influence the weather. They influence the abundance of crops. We know that. We've said that in a way. There are some people out there, I don't know, I just drive by a farm, it's just sitting there. I don't think what I'm thinking or what I'm doing has any impact on it. But everything is connected, it's interconnected. It cannot exist, you cannot be there, and it cannot be there without the two interacting with each other and affecting each other. I would say, if you want to talk about universal laws, that's the law of one. That's the law of cause and effect. And if we begin to assess the world's problems, rather than trying to re-engineer or, it's like reinventing the wheel. If if it's a wheel that you have to have, then you're going to have to go with the variety of wheels that we have. But maybe it's not a wheel at all that's required to achieve that. And yet we look to those that are creating this problem as the source of the solution or a potential solution. And we err when we do that if their intention is other than ours. The two cannot exist. It's like the biblical saying of following two masters. You're going to love one and hate the other. And if your master is illusory wealth, or a fiat banking system, or usury credit, that serves a purpose if that's the world you choose to live in. But it's designed to the benefit of those that created it. They've created it, and that's what I'm talking about here. We can and we must create our reality for ourselves. They're not going to do it. They're playing their game. And I've often said it's time for us to invent our own game, write our own script. I'm tired of theirs.
Well, not only that, but I can assure you that if things continue in their present path, the very forces that they're playing with are going to bring about a sterilization that's going to affect all of us. I don't know how many times we've spoken about this on previous shows, but just like you said a moment ago, not only do our attitudes and our thoughts affect the weather and the crops and all of this, but they affect the whole planet.
Yes.
And there are mechanisms in the planet which will only tolerate so much of that garbage before it resets the stage and mankind is going to have to start over. And this has happened already at least 5 or 6 times that we're aware of. On the other hand, if we would take the bull by the horns and make positive effort towards improving the situation, the opposite could be true. You could have a return to a golden age. The whole mechanism is in the universe is set up on the idea of free will.
Yeah.
There are consequences no matter which choice you make. But the choice is yours to make. And that's the point. You have to do something. If you go along for the ride and become apathetic, then you cannot complain about where you wind up. And, that,
yes.
And that's the main thing for us to realize.
Yes, I agree with that. Well, this has been a recurring theme. We talked about this for a number of months. We talked about it for 2 months straight at one point on this show, every night. And I think in many ways there have been positive responses. And I think just putting this message out there in and of itself affects things, you know, just like we could affect a row of plants that were sitting here on a table listening to this message. Finally, someone's speaking in our behalf, you know, the plants. I'm quoting the plants. Finally, a couple of them might be getting it. And
so I think we've had some good responses, and you've told me that there have been quite a few worthwhile faxes come in from people who listen to some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully the message is getting out there.
Yeah. You and I, last week, we spoke about, you know, discerning with the heart and speaking with the heart and using the heart as a mechanism, an aspect of our being that has this direct connection with the center of the universe and thus the creator. And when we begin analyzing, and I mean, maybe the word is judging, because analysis I think if you're perceiving what you're feeling, does it require analysis? You know, it certainly doesn't necessarily lend itself well to judgment, because usually judgment makes determinations of a negative consequence, or makes determinations that lead to negative consequences. And undoing the work that's been accomplished. And we really must be wary or aware of the attempts to dissuade our natural way of let's say operating, and the attempts to create unnatural circumstances. They go to great lengths to create these illusions. And lying is the first one that they use. And I guess people are just so accepting of those that lie about their intentions, and the secrecy behind the lies, or the secrecy that's there, that some of us see, some of us hear, some of us discern that it's there, morphs into more evil on a consistent basis. It's nonstop, and yet what allows it to move in this sort of perpetual motion, or along this perpetual path, is our ignorance of it, or our apathy that it's occurring, our denial that it's occurring, and our fear that it's occurring, and what might happen to us if we should recreate something else, or remember something else. And remembering isn't solely a process of recalling facts in the mind, or recalling experiences, but it's the rebuilding of the body. Because, we've been cut off. We might as well not have arms and legs and hands and feet. It's that disempowering. As far as the powers that be are concerned, the hands serve the purpose of stuffing one's face with toxins, you know. And the feet serve the purpose of running away from reality, or simply moving down the wrong path. We've got to straighten these things out.
Well, you hit on a very important point there, Don, because look at the, we don't even have to say any names. You know, you can pick whatever politician you want to look at, but they'll say one thing, and they'll do exactly the opposite. And then they'll do the same thing all over again, with another lie. And people watch this happen, and yet they're like in denial. It's like, I guess that's not what he meant, or whatever. But they don't realize that in the whole course of that procedure, something has been changed in our environment. Usually, laws have been passed that we would never approve of. Our freedoms have been eroded to the point where they're really questionable anymore. And this is all because nobody challenges anything. If you listen to some of these guys when they're having their so-called debates and the things that they get up there and talk about, or even better is to listen carefully to questions that are asked with politicians on interviews with the media.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask a question, and the guy will give an answer that has absolutely nothing to do with the question. What reporter did you ever hear would say, "Hey, Mac, I didn't ask you that. Don't get off the track. Be responsible and answer what I did ask you." Nobody does that.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're afraid to challenge the guy. And so whatever garbage he spills out all over you is accepted.
Well, there may be
a couple of exceptions. It's a good thing I'm not in the audience.
Yeah, there may be a couple of exceptions, and that might be Lou Dobbs and Keith Olbermann. But there are times I wish both of them would say more than what they say, because they do hit the nail on the head I heard such an interview a couple of nights ago with Lou Dobbs and Barney Frank. And Barney Frank was indignant and interrupting every time Lou Dobbs, who is the host of the show, it's his show, and Barney Frank is, oh, you asked me the question, let me give you the answer. No, he wants to spin the answer. He wants to lie about the truth, and it's about a topic with which I'm very familiar. Flat out lied, okay? But he wants to build on that lie, embellish the lie, to make sure that it's a complete lie, that if anyone attacks it, then they are attacking Barney Frank, okay? Or they are, it's presented as if they're attacking the truth. Listen, if they are doing the right things, you tell me why this country is so screwed up. Answer that question for me. If you know what the hell you're doing, why is the country screwed up under your leadership? Well, that's presuming that you are a leader, okay? That's the first mistake. These are not leaders. These are criminals, okay? They're racketeers. They're working in collusion with each other. They're stealing the people's money. They're assessing the bills to undo the corruption or to perpetuate the corruption by assigning more debt to the people in this country who blindly are believing that this is leadership. Well, we know they lie. We know they don't say the truth. So why are we in denial about that? You see, why don't we hold them accountable? They are responsible for their actions as we are responsible for our actions. Why is it that they bear no responsibility? These are the questions we should be asking ourselves, you see? How can we have this spiritual discussion and deny that this is going on, you see? Well, we know they're playing games. They're playing mind games. This is all a big illusion. So why don't we demand the truth? Why don't we seek the truth? Why don't we manifest a reality that exists of nothing but the truth? So help us God. That's the oath they take in their courts. And that's what they take in the oath they take in their investigations. But their investigations are designed to mask the truth, to hide the corruption, or to explain it away as they didn't know this was going to happen, or they didn't see this coming. Come on, give us a break. We see it. You and I see it, Jim. Are we the only ones that see this, or are there others?
Well, I think there's probably lots of others. I just don't know how many. The point is, though, that the time is going to be coming pretty soon where if something isn't done, then you won't be able to do anything. And I believe very strongly that the people that are pushing for this new change are well aware of that fact. I mean, laws have been passed recently that are really, really scary. I emailed you one. You know, that new law that they passed that actually went through the Senate and the House and was up for signing in record time. And I forget the bill number, but that law basically states that by 2011, there will be no U.S. citizens allowed to live anywhere but in the cities. They actually passed that.
I mean, well, then we have to build more cities, you know? And we can pass laws in our cities that they can't come in.
Well, I mean, besides the point, the issue is, what does that tell you about their intentions?
Oh, yeah. We've talked
about
this.
The fact that they didn't publicize it, you know, they did it quietly and quickly.
Well, then that's their little secret. That's not ours. Why do we have to subscribe to that? This is illegal. This is just more racketeering, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
and
Jim,
of course, it was not. It was done under a lie, also, because it's supposedly an effort to preserve all of the natural environment. They forgot to mention the fact that those lands that they depopulated were then bequeathed to the UN.
Oh, no, this is so out of hand. So out of hand, who is the UN? Who are they? Just another set of criminals, right? Just another set of perverts, criminals, pedophiles, crooks. Mention one good thing that these people do or have done.
Well, it's a bad subject to get me started on because you know my feelings.
Yeah, we'll have to save that for another show. Jim, we're out of time. I think we covered some interesting ground. it's inevitable that it moves in this direction
Everything's moving in that direction. It's a sign of the times, my friend.
Yes, it is, but it's not the end of the times. In fact, what is their goal is perceived as an end to a means can be the beginning of a new end to a means. Totally out of their realm. And especially their realm of understanding, because they have created a reality of fear, which is really based on illusions, and they're of the belief and the illusion, they're influenced by that very illusion themselves. They're the ones that are controlled. They're the ones that are fearful. And their own fears will become a reality. That is evident. And the footprints are all over the place. I had to throw that in. Jim, thanks for being on the show. It was a wonderful discussion. I'm sure we'll continue this at some point in the near future.
Well, Don, I'm always happy to attend. You know that. So thank you for having me aboard.
Okay. I look forward to seeing you on Evident Footprints again next week. And in the meantime, I would like to say special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick for the sound tonight. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. Join us again next Monday for another great show. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.